Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 97 of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. I'm excited for Wild Card Weekend. I hope you are too. Weird week, always a weird week. We're not here to do that. We're here to talk football, and I'm excited for one reason. We've never had this many NFL playoff games on one weekend. That is the reason I am coming to you a little bit earlier on your Saturday than usual. We were considering putting it up last night, but then we thought about injury news and, you know, might play, blah, blah, blah. We're going to have those issues with the Sunday games anyway. No reason, theoretically, to have those issues with the Saturday games. Will we? We might. Who knows? You can't predict everything, but we're working on it. Hope you guys all enjoyed Week 17. Hope you all staying safe, staying healthy, wherever you might be, and hope you all are ready to jump into my little, you know, abbreviated standout seven. And it usually gets abbreviated when we clump these games together, but you know what? We're going for a Fab Five because it's going to be a wonderful weekend for the NFL, and, you know, we've never had a spectacular six-pack, and, wow, we got to stop with the alliteration. This is not a Dr. Seuss book. Anyway, let's jump right in, and we're going to start number one with Black Monday. We have to. For those of you that aren't familiar, it would shock me if you're not, because you're listening to a very niche NFL podcast somewhere on the internet that you stumbled upon. But if you aren't, I will fill you in. Black Monday is the name given to the Monday following the conclusion of the NFL regular season. This is because this is when the most coaches, in terms of on one calendar day, are usually laid off. We saw that Adam Gase technically laid off Sunday night. We'll get into Gase. We'll start with him. But then Anthony Lynn also laid off. Right now, we have openings there. We have openings in Jacksonville, openings in Atlanta, other places, I believe, as well. Let's take a quick look around the league. There's also a job opening in Detroit, and the final one being the one we'll talk about on its own later in Houston. Obviously, some of these coming during the regular season. There's some big question marks around these teams that we've discussed a little bit, and, you know, we can run through it again in an abbreviated fashion. But the main thing we're going to go over here is the coaches that were fired at the end of the season. We're going to talk about Adam Gase, and we're going to talk about Anthony Lynn, and Doug Marrone, I guess I should say. We'll throw Doug in there, too. Fun fact, obviously, we've mentioned this before. If you've heard it, you know it. If you haven't, welcome, and hopefully you'll hear it again. Doug Marrone, alumni of yours truly's high school, Herbert H. Lehman High School in the Bronx, in New York. And you know what, while we're here, let's start with Doug. Doug did not have a great tenure down in Jacksonville, and part of that had to do with the fact that, you know, they had Coach Coughlin down there trying to institute a kind of system, and, you know, that doesn't really mesh with the modern NFL player, whatever that might mean. You could take that to your head. It was a little bit easier for him to be a little bit more of a disciplinarian when he was the one making the calls at the end of the day and the one that the players were always seeing. We had guys like Jalen Ramsey, who obviously we know his personality, and that's definitely not a mesh. We had other guys just kind of force their way out of there. It was a very talented team. Back in, I believe it was 2017, when they went all the way to the championship game in the AFC. And really what that year was, and I believe, I'm trying to think back, were we on the air for that season? Let me scroll through here. I don't know if we actually were. If we look back, no, we started in 18. And we were big on Jacksonville in 18, and we botched those. That's why we had only a 60% win rate that year. Yes, we have the win rate for this year, by the way. And we'll be talking about that later as we get into the pick'em portion and talk about the Super Wild Card Weekend. It's an interesting name. I kind of like it. It's growing on me. Either way, so let's talk about Doug. Now, the thing that happened with Doug is they went into that first year and they had Blake Bortles as their quarterback. And for some reason, Blake Bortles had the best season of his career. And when you look at the statistics, he really didn't. He had 3,700 passing yards. He had 21 touchdowns. I mean, the kid really wasn't great. He wasn't. But what was great was that Jacksonville defense. That's what really separated that Jacksonville team from everything else. And this is, you know, Doug gets the job coming off of a thing where he was supposed to, apparently, get the job with the New York Jets, hometown New York kid. but he was, once again, if you believe the rumors, the owner was disillusioned or turned off to it after he read a column that was kind of ripping the potential hiring, which is whatever, which is very intriguing. You know, the other thing being, how much credit does Doug get for that defense, considering Doug's an offensive coach? Doug was an OC in New Orleans. He was a line coach with the Jets, tight ends coach back in Tennessee, O-line coach in college, you know, the whole thing. So, who really gets the credit? I mean, you're the leader of the team, right? And when it came down to it, they lost that game in New England. They were never the same afterwards. They tried to hang on for one more hurrah with Bortles. He goes 3-9 as a starter in 18. They cut bait from him. Obviously, now they're in the Trevor Lawrence era in all likelihood. Was it a just firing? Yeah. We knew Doug was on the way out. In four seasons, his record was, what, 22-42? That's just not good enough. On top of the fact that his only winning season was in his first season. Oh, sorry, 23-43. That's right. He started in 16. He coached two games. Whatever. Four full seasons, 22-42. That's not good enough. Take out the 10-6 year. In 3 years, he was 12-36. Which is abysmal. It's a shame. You know, I mean, Doug didn't really do that badly in Buffalo. You know, 6-10 and then 9-7 back in 14. I'm intrigued to see the 2014 Buffalo Bills. I believe that was, oh, that was a Kyle Orton-led team. 18 touchdowns to 10 picks. EJ Manuel was the backup who spelled him for four games. Fred Jackson, 500 rushing yards. That team was not very good, and they somehow won 90, offensively at least. On the defensive side of the ball, perhaps, but offensively, that team is not great. Just looking at the pure stats and the people on that team, obviously. His first year, they started EJ Manuel. He goes 4-6, and they bring in Thad Lewis. That was the year Jeff Toole got out there. Everybody remember Jeff Toole? I do. CJ Spiller on that squad. Tashard Choice on the first squad. Some throwback names for you, if you're a fan of them. Stevie Johnson. If you're a fan of him, if not, that's all good. It doesn't really make a difference. Good firing from Jacksonville really makes sense to me. Where are they going to go with head coach? I don't know. Do you need an offense or a defense? You need both. So I'm thinking they'd probably lean offensive because they need to make sure that they don't fall into a situation like the Jets where they have a guy like Sam Darnold, who everyone agreed was a great prospect, and everyone being not me, but the people who get paid to do this for a living, and then you don't cultivate him, and he stagnates, and he really doesn't develop at all in 2 years. At the end of the day, and we'll talk about Sam Darnold in a sec, and the Jets in a sec, which is why we're transitioning, but at the end of the day, you could get a defensive coach who's fantastic, but if Trevor starts to flounder, then you get a Mark Sanchez situation, keeping it in topic, and Mark Sanchez never really developed at all. He had decent game manager tendencies, but he could never win you a game. And that's the way it is, and you're hoping Trevor Lawrence has an immense amount of talent, and they're saying, from what I've heard right now, the standard used to be, you know, it was Elway, then it was the Andrew Luck prospect. Now they're thinking that this might be the best quarterback prospect they've seen since Luck. He might be the new standard for QBs coming out of college. My apologies if my voice sounds a little odd. I'm coming down with a little bit of a cold as we battle the winter here in New York City. But either way, I think it'll be interesting to see where they go. We'll cover the breakdown as we go in the playoff episodes, if they are able to make a hire in the next month, which they might. If not, we'll prognosticate a little bit, and we'll see where we go with that one. On to the New York Football Jets. The New York Jets hired Adam Gase, who had one winning season in Miami. In that season, his first season, he was fresh off of, you know, the commendation of being right in there with Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning loved him. He has Ryan Tannehill as his QB. Ryan Tannehill goes 8-5. Matt Moore goes 2-1. They win 10 games. Tannehill, notably, has been significantly better away from Adam Gase. And obviously, this is not a consideration the Jets could make when they were hiring him, because it happened as, you know, he was already the head coach of the New York Jets. But those were weird teams. Jay Ajayi, Jarvis Landry, you look around, there's some talent on those squads. Devontae Parker, Kenny Stills, there's some talent there, and 6-10 the following year, 7-9 the final year. He gets a three-year run in Miami. He's not really great any of those years. The development of Tannehill didn't really seem like much, in my opinion. They move on from a couple of players that seem pretty good, a la Jarvis Landry. And immediately, the New York Football Jets snatch up Adam Gase. This is a guy that was unemployed for, what, a couple of months tops? He's fired in 18, and he's already hired in 19. So he didn't even take a season off to reassess, to do any of the shenanigans and all the pleasantries you hear from a guy like Mike McCarthy, who went out and, you know, had a bad season after saying, granted, quarterback got hurt, but still. He didn't do any of that stuff. They said supposedly, and this is more rumors from New York papers and publications and things like, maybe The Athletic may have touched on it. Supposedly Peyton Manning really signed off on him, and that was big for the ownership. But Peyton Manning signed off on him the last time, and I don't think Peyton Manning tied coaches, and I could be wrong, correct me in the comments if there's a comment section where you're listening to this, or on social media, at Nick Donadic. My name's in the description, NikDonadic. Everywhere, shoot me a DM, shoot me a tweet, shoot me a Facebook Messenger message, hit me up on LinkedIn, whatever you prefer. We'll talk some football. Either way, so Gase comes in, and this team is 7-9. Now, this is coming off of a Todd Bowles tenure, where at one point, and I'm a fan of Todd Bowles, all things forward. At one point, the team was a 10-win team. And it's interesting to note that team was with Ryan Fitzpatrick, obviously. They're 10-6 in Bowles' first year, then they go 5-11, 5-11, 4-12. He deserved his firing, right? The team was searching for a QB. They weren't just going to let him hang around. It just wasn't the way it is. I'm sorry, Todd. I like Todd, but it is what it is. But for them to move on from Todd to a guy like Adam Gase, who essentially was Todd Light in Miami, one 10-win season, and then 6-10, 7-9, you're slightly better, you're not really moving up, you're not making the flashy hire, which you don't always need to, the young guy who's supposed to be a whiz, you're not making the obvious hire, the guy that's bounced around, you're not making the Hail Mary hire, the older, like the Tony La Russa to the White Sox, you're not making the hire, oh, we got Schottenheimer out of retirement. We got Joe Gibbs, if you're the Redskins of old. Redskins being the proper one. They were the Redskins at that time. You're not doing any of that. What you're doing is you're hiring a guy who was an OC for Peyton Manning. Big deal. And you're trying to see if he can lead you to whatever he might lead you to. And it just wasn't there. You know, you take a look at the way Sam Darnold's played under him. 19 touchdowns to 13 picks in the first year. Not great. Obviously, the whole thing with mono and blah, blah, blah. And then this year, he was just worse. 2-10 record, 9 touchdowns to 11 picks. Although I will admit he was coming on a little bit better towards the tail end of the season, but that could be because every team had written them off as just folding it in a la Philadelphia Eagles fourth quarter, and we'll get to that. That wasn't the case. You know, these are still professionals. They're still going out there trying to win, still going out there trying to play the best that they can, still going out there trying to, you know, get that next contract because they are trying to make a living. And that brings us to the obvious, where do the Jets go from here? Well, picking at number two, and I've heard the rumor that they're going to be trading number two. They're rooting for Justin Fields to win that championship so his stock could be never higher. I don't know. This is no insider's take right here. I don't know if teams are going to be sold on trying to move up for Fields after what they've seen out of Ohio State quarterbacks. This is not only a Haskins comment. This is a Cardale Jones not really being anything comment. This is, I mean, Terrell Pryor was all right, I guess, but he played wide receiver. I thought he didn't really get too much of a shot at QB, personally. This dates back to a guy like Troy Smith, you know, not really working out. Ohio State quarterbacks haven't really been it, so to speak, the pedigree. Compare it to another school, like maybe, if you want to be that guy, Oklahoma. You know, Kyler Murray, looking pretty good. Baker Mayfield seems to be finding his footing on a great team. You could go Jalen Hurts if you want, although my brain still sees him as more Alabama than Oklahoma. That's neither here nor there. Then again, you know, Oklahoma, you can go back to Sam Bradford. If he could stay healthy, who knows, whatever. I tend to think it has to be... This is the opposite of Jacksonville. Jacksonville, I think it will be an offensive coach because they want to cultivate Lawrence. If the Jets fall in love with Fields, they might do the same. If they feel like, look, we need to have someone save Darnold to save face for us. Maybe they will, but they could easily get a defensive coach and say, all right, look, we might go 4-12 the first year because our quarterback stinks and this guy won't help him, but at the end of the day, we'll draft somebody next year. Who cares? Maybe they'll go like someone like the kid from BYU, let him sit, play a couple games at the end of the year. Next year, it'll develop. What it really comes down to me, if the Jets are ever going to be successful under Darnold, or with Darnold, I should say, is the talent around him. You take a look at the 7-9 Jets from 19, compare them to the 2-14 Jets from this past year. And the interesting thing, would be the skill position players. So you take a look, obviously, leading rusher, 789 yards, Le'Veon Bell, was an elite back, but he didn't play elite for the New York Jets, coming off of a one-year break. Jamison Crowder, Robbie Anderson, who, if you listen to the show, I was always high on, but he never took that next step with the Jets. He was phenomenal with the Carolina Panthers, and this is another skill position player that, under Adam Gase, just didn't develop. Look at Devontae Parker now. Devontae Parker, for my money, is not in that A tier of receiver. But you could make an argument he could be a legit, he's an amazing number two for a great team, or he could be a legit number one for a team that's a playoff contender. I mean, the guy did it this year, so I can't really say he couldn't, you know what I mean? You add in the fact they tried to have Demaryius Thomas come in, they tried to make the effort. Quincy Enunwa was on the squad, though he barely played. I still think Quincy's got something left in the tank, if anyone ever wants to make a move on that. You take a look at this year, their leading rusher is Frank Gore, the aging husk of Frank Gore. They don't bother with giving a bunch of carries to the backup backs, who, by the way, are much younger. A guy like Ty Johnson, who showed some flashes. A guy like Josh Adams listed on here, 29 for $157 on the year. That's a pretty good game. Ty Johnson, 54 for 254. The lowest yards per carry. Lowest yards per carry on their team at the running back position was from Frank Gore, and he took the most carries. Now, is that a result of the fact that the other guys were change of pace and they assumed they were passing downs instead? I don't know. I'm not going to give you a deep analysis of a 2-14 team's offense. I'm sorry. It's not worth it. The coaching staff's been fired. It's not worth the effort. You look at the receiving core, I mean, I think Jamison Crowder's decent, but is he good enough to be your number one wideout? Probably not. Breshad Perriman's a deep threat. That's all he really is. Did he show anything insane for them? Not really. Is he better than John Brown? No. And that's not even a guy that's an elite tier receiver. He's a good deep threat out there, but is Breshad Perriman better than him? No. Did we see a lot from Chris Herndon? No. Did we see a lot from Denzel Mims? No. So what do you have as a new coach from this regime? You have a disgruntled fan base. You have a quarterback who some estimate may be broken beyond repair. You have a running game that, if Frank Gore hangs it up, if and when, is needing a new lead horse somehow. And a receiving core that still doesn't have the talent. These are problems that hampered them when they had Todd Bowles. And they weren't able to fix them under this regime. And, you know, we have some notes from a guy like Adam Schefter saying that there's a major trade coming this offseason. The big question is whether they trade Darnold or the number two pick. I don't know. Are you better just to start off with Fields and say, or Zach Wilson, if they fall in love with the kid from BYU. Are you better off, granted that would be a Giants-esque thing to reach at two for him, but who knows, maybe he has a great combine. Are you better off taking a new QB and starting over, or trying to salvage a quarterback who's already in the third year of his rookie deal, who the fans already, quite a few of them, think has no talent, can't develop, blah, blah, blah. Granted, look at what San Francisco did with Alex Smith. Things are salvageable. But does Sam Darnold have the same talent level of Alex Smith? I don't know. I'm not going to say Alex Smith is the most talented quarterback in the NFL. That would be a big stretch. He never had a big arm, things like that. But he had mobility. When Harbaugh was there, he had mobility, he had B-tier arm strength, and he had A-tier decision-making for the most part and accuracy. That was his thing. He was the game manager supreme. He was phenomenal at it. And he did the same thing, brought it to Kansas City, even though they added a little bit more of a shot play thing in Kansas City, I think. You know, under Andy Reid, obviously. And then the shot play developed even more with Mahomes. And then he goes to Washington, and obviously now he's a playoff quarterback, potentially. We'll talk about the injury situation in the pick'em portion. But interesting opening with the New York Jets. Next, we'll touch on all of them. Why not? The Los Angeles Chargers moving on from Anthony Lynn. This one, I think, is interesting. I genuinely like Anthony Lynn as a coach, and I think Anthony Lynn, he's not Mike Tomlin, right? And that's kind of obvious of a bad comparison, but I think there's some of that aspect in there, a calming force kind of guy, a guy that could have been there as they take the next step. You put a good coach in there, you get some breaks, next year this team could be a 10-win team, easy. You take a look at the fact that this team started with a quarterback that wasn't the guy who might be Rookie of the Year. We've already filed our ballot, by the way, so the playoffs will not be impacting us, but we're not going to announce it until the playoff week. They go instantly 1-0 with Tyrod, then they have a tough game against Kansas City. They lose in overtime. Okay, you look at a 5-point loss to Carolina. You look at, okay, a 1-touchdown loss, albeit late comeback and shenanigans, to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. A 3-point loss in overtime to the New Orleans Saints. These are close, a 1-point loss, to the Denver Broncos. A 5-point loss to the Las Vegas Raiders. An 8-point loss to the Miami Dolphins. 10 points to the Bills, who might be the best team in the AFC, depending on your opinion. They get blown out by New England. They win their last 4 games. And this is what I think put Herbert over the top. Game-winning drive against Atlanta, game-winning drive against the Raiders, game-winning drive against Denver, game-winning everything against the Chiefs backups. Chiefs backups not going to really do you too much. But a good strong win streak to end the season. You think that there might be some momentum to keep him. I'm kind of surprised that they're moving on from him considering the circumstances. Anthony Lynn is not some kind of bum head coach. This wasn't a two out of three win streak to end the year with Adam Gase. You know, Anthony Lynn started as a special teams assistant way back when. The guy was a running backs coach. The guy was an offensive coordinator. Like, I think there's a talent there in terms of coaching that he brings to the table. And I think we saw that with how Justin Herbert developed from a guy that didn't know he was going to start, a guy that once upon a time was a Heisman candidate, as we've discussed. He was a Heisman candidate who was supposed to be high-targeted, didn't wind up winning the Heisman, drops a little bit in people's minds, winds up going to the Chargers, and boom, 7 wins in a rookie year is a great year. I don't know where they're going to go. I know Pep Hamilton's on the staff as a QB coach. I very much like Pep. I liked him a lot when he was in Indy. I think it'd be interesting if they were to try and keep him on, or maybe even promote him, give him a shot. But I really do think this was the worst firing of all of them. I think you can make the argument with all the other ones, you know, it wasn't going well. Detroit, obvious. Atlanta, blown lead after blown lead after blown lead after blown lead. Houston, completely wrecked the franchise with Bill O'Brien. The Jets, duh. The Jaguars, one fluky year. And, you know, you take a look and some of the other rumors, Matt Nagy was on the hot seat. He makes the playoffs, he's fine. The team's been in the playoffs twice under him. Zach Taylor, which we'll get into in a sec. Vic Fangio, who I think probably should have gotten fired. Doug Peterson, who we'll get into later. Like, there's a lot of people on this line. I would say Anthony Lynn, along with Nagy, has probably done the most out of all of them. You could say Bill O'Brien, but he wrecked the franchise, and the franchise QB hated him. This is a situation where I think they might have overreacted. And I think Anthony Lynn should have a job this coming year and probably be a head coach within 2 or 3 years again. I think he's that talented. I do think he's that good. There's rumors that, and this is, you know, the fan in me, there's rumors that the New York Giants coordinator, Jason Garrett, or not rumors, but he will be getting interviews with several places. If someone were to hire him, which would be kind of shocking that he would get a job that fast. I mean, might as well bring back Marvin Lewis. Oh, wait, people are interviewing him too. Then I would be remiss to say that Anthony Lynn wouldn't be a great hire. Like, was the Chargers offense dominant? No, but Anthony Lynn, with the work that he did with Justin Herbert, that development with Daniel Jones, this team would be a playoff team this year and this upcoming year. Massive step forward needed in New York. Let's end with the could have been fired. So we've talked about the Detroit opening before. We've talked about the Houston opening before. We've talked about Atlanta. We'll do updates on those. Kind of doing this one on the fly. Jacksonville, we've just discussed. Let's talk about guys that could have been fired. Zach Taylor in Cincinnati is an interesting one for me. Part of me thinks Zach Taylor should be fired. Because Zach Taylor, the team has been awful under Zach Taylor. But I give him this. He expected to have Joe Burrow this year. They might have won. They won 4.5 games, if you count a tie as a half win. They won 4.5 games. Take a look at this team at the quarterback position. Brandon Allen, 1-4. Ryan Finley won one game in the fluky. Pre-injury, Joe Burrow in, call it 10, because he did play 10. He didn't finish the last one. 2,700 yards, 13 touchdowns to 5 picks. Not a bad rookie year. QBR over 50, which means he was playing above average. Sacked 32 times. That'll get to you. What it comes down to it is, it's kind of a weird situation here. I think there's talent in the skill position for them. I like Gio Bernard as a decent back. I like Joe Mixon as an above average back, maybe in the B tier. In the receiving core, Tyler Boyd was pretty darn good. He 841 yards. If I remember correctly, he was better last year, though. Yeah, Tyler Boyd coming off 2,000-yard receiving seasons. And, you know, you take a look, the first of which with 11 games of Andy Dalton and 5 games of Jeff Driscoll, and the second one with 13 games of Dalton and 3 games of Ryan Finley. Finley threw for 470 yards in 3 games. So Tyler Boyd is a legitimate number 2, potentially number 1 talent at the receiver position. And for him to only scrounge up, you know, 8 starts, 15 games, for him to only scrounge up 800 yards, it's got to be the number of games, I imagine. I know, you see T. Higgins, who I really liked in college. T. Higgins comes away with 900 yards. That's a good year. The thing that comes away to me is A.J. Green is, it just doesn't look like he's A.J. Green anymore. Now, it might be he's tired of the losing. He might go to a better team and be great, you know, but because he's not Larry Fitzgerald. And we love Larry on this show. We love Larry everywhere. But Larry's just, it's not there anymore. I think A.J. Green's had the injuries that have hampered him, but I don't know. There's talent in the skill positions of this team. So I think that if Joe was around the whole year, as we take a look through some of the games, Joe goes down in his 10th game. So we'll start week 11. This team loses to the New York Giants by 2 points. Joe Burrow probably wins that game. This team loses to Miami. It might have been closer with Joe. And they get blown out by Baltimore. Could this team have been a 5-win team? They lose the game where he gets hurt against Washington 20-9. Not an awful game, all things considered. Your rookie quarterback goes down and yada, yada, yada. But if he plays the full game, does he win? I don't know. At that point, he was 22 of 34, 200 yards and a touchdown, no turnovers. Maybe he does. I don't know. This was a 5-win season. 6, maybe you count the Giants. Is that much better on the palate? Yeah, if Joe Burrow's not hurt, it definitely is. So I understand them giving him one more shot. I don't think, if there aren't some developments with this team, and developments being talent either acquired or, you know, players getting better, if they win 5 games again next year, he's going to be gone. No matter his ties to Joe Burrow or not, you can't go out and go 2-14, 4-11-1, and 5-11 and keep your job for a 4th year. It's just not the case. Now let's talk about Vic Fangio. The reason I think Vic was kept, I mean, there's probably a couple, but part of it has to do with the fact that Elway is moving up in the front office, quote unquote, so he will not be the GM anymore. He will not have, or rather the president of football ops, whatever his title was, he will not have final say on certain things. He will be there to help them hire a GM. I think the GM will have 1 year of Vic Fangio and then inevitably fire Vic. This Denver team was injury-riddled, and I can understand them giving him another kick at the can. I thought they'd be a playoff team. Remember that? Man, I look foolish. But I really did think they would. They were injury-riddled. It was an awful year. I think the new GM will pick somebody new at the end of next season. That's my genuine opinion. And that's really it. That brings us to the end of Black Monday. We talked about the other ones. That's your firing. Anyone else that should have been fired? This is the interesting one. Let me know what you guys think. Weigh in on this one. Whenever you want to, wherever you want to. The Jets is an obvious one. We go through division by division. Bills are a playoff team. Dolphins were good. Patriots, you're not firing Belichick. Chiefs are a playoff team. I think Gruden was good in Vegas. I think this team was good enough to be a playoff team. Arguably, the Jets had bad breaks. Chargers, I think, misplayed. I do think Vic could have easily been fired, but they don't have a new GM yet, so I think that's what made it so that he wasn't fired. Everybody in the AFC North was good except for the Bengals. Give Zach Taylor another kick at the can, I guess. AFC South, 2 of the teams fired their coaches. The 2 teams that didn't are in the playoffs. NFC East, I think Ron Rivera's been great with Washington. Obviously, they're a playoff team. I think Joe Judge showed enough that he gets a second year. I mean, I'm not a big fan of firing a guy after 1 year anyway. You got to be really incompetent. I think he showed enough. I think McCarthy, obviously, you're not going to fire him. Doug Peterson's an interesting one. I don't think he gets fired because he brought them the title. You're really going to have to be bad for a while. Look at how long Tom Coughlin, and I love him, was allowed to be mediocre to bad in New York. You win a title, you get some cachet. NFC West, you're not firing Shanahan. You were just in the Super Bowl. Cliff Kingsbury, your team's 8-8. You barely missed it. You can blame it on Kyler's injury all you want. You barely missed it. It is what it is. We'll talk about that coming up. NFC North, I don't think it would be the move to fire Zimmer in Minnesota. Team just wasn't good enough. And that brings us to, you know, Matt Rhule in Carolina. He's probably safe. So the only one I could probably argue, you could debate Cincinnati, though I wouldn't go there yet. You could debate Denver, though they don't have a GM yet to fire him, which is why, I mean, the position would probably be more attractive if Fangio was gone. But we've seen this before where, you know, the GM comes in with 1 year of a lame duck and then fires the guy inevitably, gets his draft pick, gets to do blah, blah, blah. You could move that timeline up by firing Vic at the end of the year and then hiring a GM to hire his head coach and blah, blah, blah. Let him interview all these coaches during the postseason. Probably would have been the move. But that's not the way they wanted to approach it, and I can't really blame them. So that's Black Monday. Number two in the Fab Five, abbreviated Standout Seven, whichever you prefer, we are legally obligated to talk about the NFC East. This Eagles-Washington game was bizarre. We're not going to talk about Dallas and the Giants. We're not even going to bother. It's not even going to matter. The game didn't matter at all because Washington football team, the Washington football team, was able to bring home the W on the road. My little note on this from the Giants-Cowboys game, it was an interesting game. It was a fun game. Wayne Gallman can't carry the ball in the rain, and they tried to give it away. Some weird fluky going on in that game. Neither one of those teams looked very good. Dallas has the talent to have maybe tried to push a team like Tampa, and we'll talk about the picks later. They would have played Tampa, now Washington will. They have the talent. Is Dalton good enough to push it through? We saw him and Marvin Lewis. I think they're pretty much the same person, except one's a quarterback. I don't think they're good enough to win that playoff game. The New York Football Giants, as much as I like to joke about, you know, we want Brady and all those things like that, were they talented enough? Probably not. Although with a guy like Joe Judge, you know, he rallies the troops. Maybe Garrett wants to say, I mean, if Garrett were able to salvage a Giants playoff run, he probably would be a lot higher on people's head coaching radar. But that's not the case. We don't have to talk about that. We're going to talk about the very weird ending of this Eagles football team game. Now, Wentz was inactive for this game. We know he was a healthy scratch. He also apparently requested a trade, or intends to request a trade, rather, because he believes his relationship with Doug Peterson is fractured beyond repair. So let me set the stage for you. This game is for the division. If Washington wins, they're in. If they lose, another team is in. The New York Football Giants. This means nothing to Philly. I grant you that. However, from a talent evaluation perspective, you don't know what you have in Jalen Hurts unless you're already convinced. If you're already convinced Jalen Hurts is good enough to be your quarterback next year, then you're fine with it. Then, okay, let him get some more reps out there, and it is what it is. Or maybe not. Maybe you don't want him getting hurt. You're being real conservative. Understandable. All right. You do what you gotta do. However, what do you accomplish from playing Nate Sudfeld? And this is my question to you. You being the listener, you being, if somehow anyone affiliated with Philly is listening, which I doubt, how do you gain literally anything? Nate Sudfeld, been on the team 2017, 2018, 2020. 2017, he went 19-23 for $130. Wow. 2018, he went 1-2. Wow. Nate Sudfeld, this is not the guy. I could tell you that much. If you think Jalen Hurts is the guy, all right, we could have that discussion. It's possible. I don't think Jalen Hurts through his first season really showed you much, but it's possible. I mean, he had a 52% completion percentage, 6 touchdowns to 4 picks, a QBR below 50. I mean, running the ball, 350 rushing yards, but it's not that hard to find a QB who could run and not throw. Look around college football. You could find plenty of guys who can run but not throw. It's not that hard. You know what you get when you're a college quarterback who can run but not throw? You get the Terrell Pryor treatment. You get to be Greg Ward Jr. on this team. You get to be guys that you get to be a Julian Edelman. You get to be guys like that who wind up wide receivers or safeties or things like that, or they fizzle out like a Tim Tebow. We've seen these guys. You know what I mean? We've seen them ad nauseum. And even as the NFL shifts toward a more mobile thing, which, by the way, we've been discussing at this point for pushing a decade, we still want more mobility. Oh, it's the read option, the read option, the read option. Oh, no. Now it's the RPO, the RPO, the RPO. Take a look at the guy that just went number one. You're not running read option shenanigans with a guy like Joe Burrow. You know, what are we telling these mobile quarterbacks? You need to get down. You need to not get hit. We like your explosiveness. We like your mobility, but you need to not get hit. Well, you still stay healthier when you're standing in the pocket, on average. I'll put the asterisk. A guy like a David Carr, who's constantly getting blasted, you know, you get some fluky injuries. Sure. But on average, if I'm standing in the pocket behind my offensive line with a decent decision-making process, I'm not getting hit as much as the guy who's running 15 times a game. I'm just not. If I'm a freak athlete, sure. But not every quarterback that runs is a freak athlete. Not everyone's Lamar Jackson. Some of them are Jalen Hurts. And look, the couple of ways you can look at this, from my perspective, if Wentz is your guy, and this was just an end-of-year thing, see what I got with Hurts, maybe I can trade him for something. Okay, explain that to Wentz. I'm sure Wentz will still want to be out there trying to compete for a playoff spot, because they were in it still when he was benched. It'll frustrate him, but I guess if you were to trade Hurts, it would probably make it okay. That won't happen. I doubt Hurts will be getting dealt. Two, you're not all in on Wentz, even though you just gave him the money, and you want to see what you have in Hurts. That's why you drafted him so high. You thought he was a great athlete. You thought he could be used on the NFL level at quarterback, or a la Taysom Hill, maybe, which is a real reach to get a guy that could be Taysom Hill in day two of the draft. But okay, you put him out there. You could just feature him more in packages, but now you have him out there running a full game at quarterback. Okay, so then you'd be leaving him in. Another potential scenario. You were all in, you wanted to see what you had with Wentz. He's 7 for 20, he's stinking it up, and in the back of your head you're like, well, if I bench him, maybe it'll show Carson, hey, I'm just willing to bench whoever's playing poorly at the position. It's not just you. I don't think this will do much, but it's possible that could be what happened. Or you have the excuse we're being force-fed that, no, we wanted to get Nate Sudfeld some action because we wanted to see what we had in Nate Sudfeld. This is the most bizarre thing I've heard. If we take a look through the reactions, obviously you know what they are. A guy like Eli Manning, this is why we don't like the Eagles, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter what Eli Manning thinks of the Eagles. However, when you hear Chris Mortensen say, this is the most negative barrage of comments I have received about a game's lack of integrity, and that's not even counting Giants-related bias. Consensus from those in NFL who have been associated, disgrace, not the fault of the Washington football team. Interesting. Joe Judge goes on to rip the Eagles and says, you know, we would never do something like this as long as I'm Giants head coach. Yeah, obviously. Most teams would not do this. It's bizarre. It's very bizarre. We hear that players like Miles Sanders, not very happy with it. Guys like maybe a Jason Kelsey, not very happy with it. The players did not like what happened. And now you put yourself in a situation where you were trying to be cute. You did so while also trying to evaluate Jalen Hurts a little bit. Mind you, let's look at it from this perspective. If we're calling a spade, they wanted to lose this game. Okay, so why didn't you just go with Sudfeld and all the twos? Because the game's meaningless. People would have ripped you a little bit, but not as much. No. You wanted to get three quarters of evaluating this kid at quarterback to see what he had. Okay, riddle me this. If you're up at halftime, now what? Now what? Well, Jalen Hurts played well. Jalen Hurts could go 20 of 25 with 400 yards and 6 touchdowns. All you did, what is that? It's going to spike the trade value? What do you think you're getting back from Jalen Hurts? He hasn't shown in the handful of games he had, even if he had a great game, that he could be that guy. Now you could say, look, Matt Flynn only played a couple games. Look at the money he got from Seattle. There's a difference. That's money. It was free agency. The trade value was not involved. Look at a guy like a Matt Cassel, who got dealt to Kansas City. He started a full season, and they almost made the playoffs. Matt Cassel obviously didn't develop into the starting quarterback Kansas City thought he would be. They're fine. They have Mahomes now. So, what is the prognosis here? You know, Nate Sudfeld. Take a look at the college career here of one Nathan Michael Sudfeld. Nate Sudfeld, starting quarterback, let's see, got experience with the Hoosiers as a true freshman in relief of Cameron Kaufman after Trey Robertson suffered a broken leg. He earned, by Wikipedia, by the way, earned Big Ten co-freshman of the week honors after leading a fourth quarter comeback against the vaunted Ball State. Sophomore year, he split time, earning his first start against Bowling Green. Finished the season with 2,523 yards, 21 touchdowns, 9 picks. His best college year, 3,500 yards, 27 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. How did the 2015 Hoosiers do with Nate Sudfeld at the helm in the Big Ten? 2-6 in the Big Ten, 6-7, period. Okay. Interesting. Interesting. How did Kevin Wilson do, his head coach, after that season? Okay, well, he got one more year, and then he got canned. All right, so you got a lot here. It's not, and this might seem excessive, but it's not like Jacksonville going with a guy like Minshew, who, for some reason, was top five in the Heisman race, and you see the fans like him, and the team seems to kind of like him, and he's got some chemistry. This was a bizarre move. It was a bonehead move, and it was an obvious, let's get the draft pick, and I have no problem with you getting the draft pick. That's what you should be doing to make your team's future better. But when you look at the fact that you guys have drafted some receivers high, like a J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, above a D.K. Metcalf, or perhaps a Jalen Reagor, above a Justin Jefferson, my perspective becomes, you're moving up to blow another pick? Why don't you just make a better pick? You know, and it's... the argument, and this is the last I'll say on it, as we're approaching the 45-minute mark and we haven't even gotten into the picks yet in the playoff special. The people saying, oh, look, the Giants fans are 6-10. Why are you complaining? Why are you complaining at 6-10? Why don't you win more football games? The division winner was 7-9. If you beat them, they would have been 6-10. So what conversation are we having? This is one of the worst divisions in the modern NFL in terms of a one-season production from every team in the division. What are we talking about? This is stupid. This is a stupid argument. Let's move on. Let's talk Week 17. Let's talk about the Arizona Cardinals and Los Angeles Rams, and then we'll talk a little bit about the Chicago Bears. We'll try to speed through this and get into the playoff portion of the show as quick as possible. Los Angeles Rams win this one with a backup QB. The Cardinals predominantly played with a backup QB. We discussed last week that they might have to go to. They start Kyler. He winds up nicked up. It looked like at one point he could throw the ball pretty decent, but it just they didn't go to him. It looked like he could throw, but just not scramble. I understand that's a large part of their offense, but they go to Streveler? I believe that's how it's pronounced, and they just didn't have it. The Rams in this one didn't look fantastic. John Wolford looked all right. He looked like a backup caliber quarterback, and he is a backup quarterback, so it makes sense. He was scrambling a lot. Look, guy who could run the ball a little bit and throw the ball decent. There you go. It's a guy. It's John Wolford. Fantastic. Is Jalen Hurts better than John Wolford? Probably at running the ball. I'm not sure at passing the ball. Either way, we'll move on from that. Decent game from LA. Solid game from their defense. Obviously bringing home the pick, Troy Hill. We see sacks from Morgan Fox, 2 from Samson Ebukam, 1 from Leonard Floyd. They're all over the Cardinals' backfield all game. Cardinals unable to really get the running game going. They run for about 50 yards in this game, 48 yards. Kyler only runs twice, and that's how you know he was compromised. It's a shame that it comes down to a game where the QBs are compromised to determine a playoff spot, but that's life. What are you going to do? Chicago Bears get completely and absolutely demolished by the Green Bay Packers, as we knew they would and as they should. They are not a playoff-caliber team. They're just not good enough. The interesting thing to me will be how will they play this upcoming week, and the upcoming week being this weekend, against the New Orleans Saints team that might be compromised themselves. They might not have Alvin Kamara. It's depending on, you know, the COVID tests and things like that, How will they play? Will they be able to put up a fight? We've seen some shenanigans involving the Saints in the playoffs in the past years. The Saints are prone to shenanigans-related losses. Will the Bears be able to pull it out? I don't know. I will say this, though. Picking blind with Kyler healthy, Arizona is significantly more of a threat than the Chicago team led by a man named Mitch. Next, AFC. Houston, Tennessee. This was a pretty good game. We'll talk about Houston in a sec before we get into the pick'em portion and do the playoff preview. We see after this one, J.J. Watt apologizes to Deshaun Watson for wasting a year of his career. Watson potentially wants to be traded, but on the field, they go and put up a fight. They lose this game 41-38. Watson goes for 365. David Johnson has one of his best games in a Texans uniform. Brandon Cooks, ditto. 11 catches for a 166 and 2 touchdowns. The Titans look like they thought they were going to walk into an easy one. Not so much. A.J. Brown played out of his mind. So did Derrick Henry, but it really took every single bit. Now, I'll say this. Houston lost this game, and this is one of the reasons, obviously, I don't think they'll keep Romeo full-time at head coach anyway. Romeo Crennel, former Browns coach, former Giants assistant, things like that, Patriots, D-coordinator. I don't think they do that because of this. And this is one of the reasons, obviously. End of this game, they have the game-tying field goal in their sights, and they find a way not to run out the clock and kick as time expires, which is just par for the course if you're an NFL team, right? If you're in field goal range, you take a shot maybe. All right, the least you can do, the absolute least, is run the clock and try to make, you know, try and kick the field goal. We see Tennessee get the ball back with time on the clock, throw up a Hail Tannehill. A.J. Brown pulls it down, and then it was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. They find a way, they kick the field goal, they win the game. They didn't even go to overtime. It was awful game management, in my opinion, by a team that wants to lose. All things considered, they didn't throw this game, but obviously they want to lose it. They gain nothing from winning, but they gain nothing from losing in the first round either because they don't have their draft pick. I don't know. Bizarre. Kudos to Vrabel and Tennessee for hanging on. Kudos to Derrick Henry for topping 2,000 yards, best running back in the league. Either way, bizarre game. They find a way to win, and that brings me to talking about a couple of these other ones. So let's talk about the Indianapolis Colts-Jaguars game. We don't have to talk much about it. The Colts, at one point, thought they were playing for the division, and they go out, and it looked at one point like Jacksonville kind of clawed their way back into this one. It was 20-14 entering the fourth quarter. Obviously, they wind up winning. Jacoby Brissett found his way in on a couple of plays here, which was kind of weird, just handoffs and little design runs. Kind of concerned. Mike Glennon played all right. Nothing to really talk about from this one. Just had to mention it because they were almost playing for the division until they weren't. Next, let's see. We got two more in the AFC to touch on before we get to the Watson thing, and then we get to the playoffs. As this episode's going to run a little bit long, obviously, playoff preview. Although, I hope you listen to it whenever, you know. It's still good. We're talking about tomorrow stuff. We're talking about, you know, evergreen stuff that'll be good through the offseason. Miami. Ha 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 ha. Oh my goodness, I was right. I told you this offense was better, obviously. I use my eyes. This offense was better with Ryan Fitzpatrick at the helm. They were more explosive. They're willing to take more risks. This is a game where they got thumped. They got an early interception off of Josh Allen. They get a field goal out of it. They're down 28-6 at half because the Buffalo Bills are one of the top five teams in the NFL. They're getting thumped. Then at that point, they pull Allen and they go to Matt Barkley. And we see their leading rusher in this game is Antonio Williams. They're, you know, some skill position players stay in, but Stephon Diggs didn't play the duration of this game. The defense, we see some of them get in, but we see an interception by Josh Norman, a guy that doesn't really mean as much to them, you know, as a guy like Tre'Davious White, who didn't suit up. So if you're Tua, this is your coming out party, right? This is your clinch a playoff game. 35 of 58. Problem number one, this is not a guy that has shown through his time as starter that he's capable of you throwing it 58 times and him winning the game. Now, look, I get it. I really do. You had to do it. You had to do. But 58 passing attempts? Ugh. And we see their offensive coordinator step down. Yeah, it made sense. 35 of 58, 361, still at about 5 yards an attempt, which is his hallmark, it seems. one touchdown to three interceptions. A nightmare game out in Buffalo with some precipitation coming down. 4-2 attack of Iloa. There goes the playoff spot, and I just am here to tell you one last time, I told you so. Can Tua be a solid NFL quarterback? The jury's still out. Can he be a star? The jury's still out. Can he be a great game manager? That's definitely achievable. He could easily be an Alex Smith-esque quarterback. Easily. He's got the skill set. He's got the accuracy when he's not throwing it to the other team, which is the first time he's done this. You know, I'm not saying he's a turnover machine. He hasn't been like that. But with a chance to win and in, he didn't show up. And we close with the Cleveland Browns. So we'll be getting a rematch today. Tomorrow. A rematch this weekend, I should say. Although they will be on the road for this one. Cleveland played pretty well. 24-22 win. But I am very hazy because they gave up 300 passing yards to Mason Rudolph. And they played to the wire against the backups. Several players from the Steelers stayed home. Didn't even make the trip. This gives me major cause to pause going into this rematch. Major cause. Even though I was a guy that was saying, look, Pittsburgh is the worst 11-0 team I've ever seen. And I was right. They fall all the way down. But my goodness, that is that's a big oopsie game right there if you would have lost that one at home, Cleveland. And thankfully, congratulations to the fans of Cleveland. You guys have been through a lot. You're back in the playoffs. Let's see how long it lasts, and I hope for your sake it's the first of many. Now, before we move on, and I want to get into the playoffs thing as quick as possible, and I know we've been really heavy on this, let's talk about J.J. Watt. Let's talk about Deshaun Watson. Let's talk about the Houston Texans. So supposedly Deshaun Watson, a little bit disgruntled, or maybe he's just slightly gruntled, at the fact that he was not included in the hiring process of the GM. Now, I've been watching NFL Network pregame, obviously, as they're going towards kickoff, and Steve Mariucci talking about, well, how much does a quarterback really know about prospective GMs? Kurt Warner saying he had no idea what his GMs would be. He would have no real input. It's interesting to me that he's mad about this. I don't know. Maybe he has an idea for the direction of the team composition. We've bashed them all year long from the preseason, before they were bad, before they fired Bill O'Brien. So we've been here all time. If you've been here too, thank you. If not, listen back. We've been on this. Their team building has been bad on the offensive side. Obviously, getting rid of DeAndre Hopkins, we know that. They haven't really had too much of a contributor at running back. They get David Johnson, hoping there's still something in there. I think there might be, but not as much as, you know, what used to be there. Not to mention, we're looking at a receiving core built on tiny, fast guys, and you can't really build an offense on that if all your receivers are tiny, fast guys. Take a look at the best tiny, fast guy in the NFL, and it's Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill is far and away the best tiny, fast guy. What else is on that Chiefs offense? Well, a quarterback with a rocket arm. Well, a tight end to be the security blanket. Sammy Watkins, a guy who's a little bit bigger, a guy who's more of a possession guy. A guy like a DeMarcus Robinson is there. They have guys like Sprinkle who chip in. And it's a very diverse offense, I would say. Is it predicated on deep shots? Of course it is. But can they methodically go down the field on you? Of course they can. And it was anchored, you know, a guy like Williams in their backfield who opted out. It's anchored by a guy like Clyde Edwards-Helaire who is now out. We'll see what they could do with Le'Veon Bell. We'll see as we talk about Super Bowl picks later if I'm still taking them now that they're minus a starting running back for the second time. But they're predicated on that. I'm sure that he was frustrated going in because I'm sure, look, he knows much more about football than I ever will. So I'm sure that he probably realizes, hey, I don't think this is going to work. And yeah, you know what? You were right. It didn't work. This does not shock me, and it did not shock him. But you take a look at his stats, and Deshaun Watson statistically had the best season of his career with a team that was the worst of his career. You look at his first year, 3-3, the injury happens, things like that. 19 touchdowns to 8 picks. He was playing great. 26 touchdowns to 9 picks, 4,200 yards. They win 11 games. Good team. Third year, 26 touchdowns to 12 picks. Picks tick up a little bit, but that's all right. So did the, the yardage went down. Maybe a little bit of a down year. They go down 10 to 5. Okay. This year, 4-12. Oof. Passing attempts got to go up. Coach gets fired midway through the year. 70% completion percentage. Career high. 4,823 yards. Granted, they got to air it out a lot because they're losing a lot. 33 touchdowns. Oh, you're thinking, oh, the interceptions got to be up. 7 picks. The sack numbers have been high. We can talk about the offensive line. The reason they don't have a first-round draft pick is because they tried to get a first, you know, Laramie Tunsil to be their franchise tackle. With those picks, 62 times he was sacked in 18, 44 last year, 49 this year. The guy gets hit a lot. Granted, some of that has to do with his play style, and I don't know if that's something that they've discussed with him, and I don't know if that's something you can discuss if you're on the hot seat. The guy holds the ball a long time. And sometimes he's just got to check it down, throw it away, run with it. Make a decision. You're sitting there. Oh, he's juking one guy. He's sitting there. If you're going to get a holding call, you're going to get sacked. Look, you might, for every play you make, it seems like you're either getting hit or it's coming back. Look, I love Deshaun Watson. I think talent-wise, he's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. No doubt in my mind. He's got superstar, you know, written on him. He's got Super Bowl contender, Super Bowl. He can win you games. He could have an all-time great career, and it was obvious coming out of Clemson. You know, it looked like he had maybe, remember his last year, they were like, ooh, the interceptions ticked up. Maybe he's got a little bit of a turnover bug. Been over 10 picks in his career one time. The guy's been fantastic. I can understand why you're angry. I can understand why you might want to request a trade, but you signed on an extension. That's something these guys got to understand. If you sign this extension, and this goes to Carson Wentz as well, if they want you here, you're here. You signed the dotted line. If you thought this might be a problem coming down the hill, and look, this would have been hard to predict for him, but if you thought there might be an issue coming down the hill, potentially, don't sign the extension. Just don't sign it. That's okay. You can do that. That's a thing you can do. I don't know. Intriguing to me. And I know it's a lot of money to turn down, and it's hard to do. And there's a lot of teams that would be interested if he was on the market. I doubt he will be. We talk about a guy like J.J. Watt keeping it in-house. There were rumors supposedly J.J. Watt might ask out because, you know, he had the big thing, the big rant, and we championed him for it. It was great. Ranting about effort and things like that from his teammates and not wanting to win and things like that. And we see Kelly Stafford, Matt Stafford's wife, with a like and a retweet on that one. You know, it's got to be stressful to be the vet that's there forever. There's a reason Calvin Johnson didn't do it forever. The reason he retired early. There's a reason Barry Sanders retired early. Because you're so good on a team that's never going to get anywhere. You know you have control of that, right, guys? You took the money, JJ. Look, does he want to request a trade? Would there be a market for JJ? Sure. But look at the fact that, you know, I love JJ Watt. I think JJ Watt brings a lot more than just the stats, right? The intensity, the leadership. He's a great player all around. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. JJ Watt, last year, played in 8 games. He had 4 sacks. JJ Watt, in 2017, played in 5 games. JJ Watt in 2016, played in 3 games. JJ Watt this year played every game. He had 5 sacks. So let's take a look. That's the last 5 seasons. In 5 seasons, you've had 26.5 sacks. That's not elite pass rusher numbers. You take a look at the first 5 years of JJ's career. 5.5 sacks, 16 games, 20.5 sacks, 16 games, 10.5 sacks, 16 games, 20.5 sacks, 16 games, 17.5 sacks, 16 games. Oh, by the way, in those 2 forced fumbles, 5 forced fumbles, 1 forced fumble, how many does he have in the last 5 years, Bill? Well, if we take a look at the scoreboard, he's only got 4. Sorry, fumble recoveries, I should say. Fumble recoveries, my mistake. Pass deflections. Big JJ thing. He had 7 this year. It's great. I'm not saying JJ had an awful year. I'm far from insinuating that. But the fact of the matter is his value, I imagine, is not what it used to be as he enters year 32 on this earth. Age 32 season. 101 career sacks. 101. How many of those came in the first 5 years? 70 plus. Dominant 5 years. Does he still have back end of career dominance in him? I think he does. Can he stay healthy? I don't know. In 5 seasons, that's 80 potential games. He has played in, survey says, anybody want to take a guess? Take a guess in your head. Before 48. You guys know how math works. What's 48 out of 80? 60% of the team's games. 60%. I don't know. Is there a market there? I think there is. Is he going to wind up staying? I think he will. He's just a disgruntled superstar. There are plenty of those in the NFL. He doesn't even have to leave his locker room to find one. Like I said, love J.J. Watt, but come on now. The team's been great the last handful of years. Have you been on the field for all of it? Sorry, J.J. It's a fact of the matter. That'll bring us... Oh, before we move on, just wanted to give a shout-out to Devontae Smith, elite playmaker, for winning the Heisman Trophy. We haven't talked too much about pre-draft stuff. We'll get into that as the draft comes up. But just wanted to put it out there. You know, big week, wide receiver bringing it home. It's usually a QB running back award, I know. But good on him. Good on him. We still haven't touched on Dwayne Haskins. We'll get there eventually. It's not big news yet. We'll let it go. Let's move on to the pick-em portion of this week's episode. And for the pick-em portion, obviously, with it being the end of the season, we're going to pick all the way through the postseason. Last week we went 13-3. That brings us to a yearly total of 163-92-1. Every time there's a tie, we get half of it, because you can't predict a tie, and if you can, you're a genius. 63.87% win percentage, our best win percentage since our best all-time in 2019. So that's second best in our four seasons. A 4% jump over last year, 12-game improvement, which is huge. Three games away from topping 19. Now, you take a look, we did pick the Jets in Week 17. That could have done it. There was a couple of those in there where we picked the Giants, which was major bonehead moves. Maybe we picked Denver early in the year. Maybe next year we can get over that 170 win mark. That's not important. You guys don't care about the stats. Let's get into the pick 'em portion. And for the pick'em portion of this week's episode, we're going to be picking all through the playoffs. So let's start with the game that will be kicking off in under an hour. The Colts at the Buffalo Bills. Injury report for this one. Buffalo, questionable wide receiver Cole Beasley, though I've heard he will go. And wide receiver Stephon Diggs, who I believe will go as well. The Colts, going to be without tackle Will Holden and, well, it's an awful name for an offensive lineman. And corner Rocky Sin, who's a great player, but he's trying to recover from a concussion. Well, I don't know about great, but he's a good player. Questionable D-tackle DeForest Buckner, big acquisition for them, Pro Bowl caliber D-lineman. I tend to think he will go, but neither here nor there. I'm taking Buffalo in this one. I think this is Buffalo's best shot at a title in a very long time, though it's going to be a rough road coming in at the 2 seed. It's going to be a weird one. Give me Buffalo to win this one at home. There's going to be some fans in there. Fans give them all the juice in the world. Will it be a little too big for Josh Allen is my question. They did not look great in the playoffs last year. I tend to think they will have improved from that. They're facing Phil Rivers. Phil Rivers, tendency to blow some games now and again. Though, the big thing coming out of this pregame, supposedly Phil says he's ready and willing to play again next year, so we will see. Part 2, I think we'll just be seeing it a lot quicker. Second game on the day, 4:40 kick. That was 105, by the way. 4:40 kick from the West Coast. The LA Rams take on the Seahawks for the third time this season. The Rams, questionable. Guard David Edwards with an ankle. Quarterback Jared Goff with a right thumb, who they're thinking might play half the game, might play none, who knows. And linebacker Micah Kizer. Questionable for the Seahawks. Couple of big ones. Corner Shaquille Griffin with a hammy. Running back Rashad Penny with a knee. And D-tackle Jaron Reed with an oblique. This is a big on-the-fence one because without knowing how much we're going to see a guy like Jared Goff, it's unclear what this offense for the Rams is going to be. I kind of liked what I saw a little bit from Walford. He didn't look great. I don't know. Once he threw the pick, he seemed to settle down, as weird as it sounds, but the completion percentage was not fantastic. There's a lot of plays that look kind of funky. He took some big hits at the quarterback position. I know Aaron Donald is a monster against Seattle. I know Seattle has been kind of eh since I was super high on them before, but I'm going to take Seattle to advance to the next round, especially playing at home, even with no fans. Next, we've got a big 8:15 kick from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers heading to Washington to take on the name redacteds. I mean, football team. Buccaneers going to be without D-tackle Jeremiah Ledbetter with a calf and running back LeSean McCoy. Questionable Carlton Davis in the defensive backfield and wide receiver Mike Evans, who I believe will go. How much will he give them? I don't know. How much will they need? I don't know. Washington still without linebacker Thomas Davis. It's a shame. I think this might be his swan song and he really can't get out there. Questionable, some huge ones. Running back Antonio Gibson, their best back. Wide receiver Terry McLaurin, their best receiver with an ankle. Linebacker Kevin Pierre-Lewis to help in that, you know, front seven with an ankle. And quarterback Alex Smith with a calf. It seems, from what I've heard, as of about noon on Saturday of Super Wild Card Weekend that Alex Smith, if he gets in this game, might not play the whole game. They might start Tyler Heinicke. I am not banking on anyone named Heinicke to beat Tom Brady in the playoffs. Even if he got some more reps, it would be shocking. It would be hilarious. We would lead the next episode with it. I guarantee you it would be in the title. I would love it. But this Tampa Bay team, although inconsistent, I'm going to keep saying it until they get eliminated, they have some of the highest ceiling potential of any team in the playoffs. When they're on, they're clicking. When they're off, oh no. Give me Tampa to win this one on the road. Sunday's games start with a 105 kick between the Baltimore Ravens and the Tennessee Titans, trying to get revenge once more. The Ravens, a lot of players listed as questionable. Guard Ben Breederson with a knee. Tackle DJ Fluker, also with a knee. Center Patrick McCarry with a back. In the defensive backfield, Jimmy Smith with ribs and shoulder. Marlon Humphrey, also with a shoulder. Wide receiver Willie Snead with an ankle. And linebacker Yannick Ngakoue with a thigh. Now, I'm on the fence. We just got confirmation Mike Evans will play today via Ian Rappaport. I'm on the fence because I think the Titans are the better football team. I do. I think the Titans are the better team. The Titans are at home. How much that will matter, I'm not sure. But I don't. How many times can you keep beating up on a team like the Ravens? They've beaten them back-to-back times. They've punked them in their house both times. I think Harbaugh's got to be able to rile up the troops for this one. This is, and look, we've seen it before. Super Bowl champions always have a narrative. This could be the revenge tour. We've seen the revenge tour before. If you're a Giants fan, you know it well. They win this. If they win this game, then they would get to play the winner of Steelers-Browns. Browns wouldn't be as much of a revenge game. Steelers, they hate them. Either way, that'll be a hated rival. Then if they win that, they would play the winner of Chiefs-Bills. I believe the Bills beat them this year, though I'm not 100% on that. We can take a look through really quick. Have they played this season? No, they played last season. My apologies. So that would mean that would have to be the Chiefs for it to be a revenge game, and these narratives usually work. I think the Titans are better. I should take the Titans, but I'm taking the Ravens because there's always a narrative for a Super Bowl champ. Perhaps it will be that one. And it will be Baltimore. Next, our 4:40 kick on Sunday is Bears at Nolens Saints. The Bears going to be without corner Buster Skrine with a concussion. Questionable, mostly on the defensive end. Linebacker Roquan Smith with an elbow. Linebacker Josh Woods with a toe/glute injury. Wonder how that happened. DB Jalen Johnson with a shoulder. And wide receiver Darrell Mooney with an ankle. For New Orleans, listed as out, guard Nick Easton with a concussion, and DN Trey Hendrickson. Hendrickson is huge. He's been having a fantastic year, and I don't know if Kamara is going to go, and it's New Orleans, and they've been having these funky seasons, these funky eliminations. I don't know, but Mike Thomas is going to be back. I don't know. I'm on the fence. I'm going to take New Orleans. I'm going to play chalk. I'm going to play it smart, but there's a lot of things in this game that make me wonder. Drew Brees has had a weird year. Mike Thomas hasn't even really been able to get out there, especially in a couple of weeks now at this point. Without Hendrickson on the defensive end, if they're without Kamara, New Orleans will win this game, in my opinion, but it's going to be a funky one. Give me New Orleans to win at home. Next, the Cleveland Browns head to Pittsburgh, 8:15 Sunday night. Their first playoff game in an eon. Nobody listed on the injury report for the Pittsburgh Steelers, just like nobody listed before for the Tennessee Titans. However, the Browns, quite a few players. Before we move on to this game, however, just noticed the Bears not listing Khalil Mack on the injury report for the first time in weeks. Is he poised for a huge game? We'll find out. Anyway, Browns, questionable. Tackle Jack Conklin, big player on that offensive line with a knee. Miles Garrett with a shoulder, their best pass rusher. Also on the defense, two in the secondary, Terrence Mitchell, corner, and MJ Stewart, corner. Back on the offensive side of the ball, Donovan Peoples-Jones, who looked pretty good in Week 17's game with a concussion. Now he's on the list, obviously. And guard Wyatt Teller with an ankle. Wyatt Teller, one of the best linemen they have, one of the best guards in the NFL this season, from everything I've been told from Pro Football Focus, and people are supposed to be smarter than me. And also one last one, former New York Jet and D lineman Sheldon Richardson with a neck. That's a lot of players on the injury report. If you get half of those guys gone, that'll impact your game plan tremendously. However, I tend to think most of them will play, if at all possible. That being said, I'm going to take the Pittsburgh Steelers to win this one at home. They almost won with their backups. It's a really tall task to beat a team back-to-back weeks. I don't know, a divisional opponent back-to-back weeks. We've seen it before. It's not impossible. But to do it in this fashion, which would be very impressive, especially considering Pittsburgh was so hot to start the year, quote-unquote, and it's in Pittsburgh, it'd be a big statement for Cleveland. But Cleveland also had to throw their A game out there last week to get that playoff berth. Pittsburgh, not so much. Wonder if Pittsburgh's got a little bit saved up for this one. Wonder if Big Ben's not eyeing down that Super Bowl run to try and clinch that first ballot Hall of Fame status. I think he'll get there. At least he'll start to get there by winning this week against the Cleveland Browns. Now, obviously, with it being the first playoff week, we have to do our full bracket. If you remember, at the beginning of the year, and as we do some scrolling, we do a little scrolling, we have to take a look at what our Super Bowl pick was at the beginning of the NFL season. Now, this is an interesting one. It's going all the way back, all the way back. Who did we have? We had Chiefs-Saints last year, and we picked the Saints. So we picked the AFC, right? This year we have Chiefs-Bucks, and we have the Chiefs winning. So let's see, will we stick with that? Let's go through. So if our record were to hold, all those games we picked were to be correct, and if we're picking our bracket, we'd have to assume they are, that would lead us to a Bills-Chiefs game next weekend, and I'm going to take the Chiefs in that one. It would also lead us to a Ravens-Steelers game, and considering I'm talking all about that narrative, we're taking the Ravens. I know. The NFC bracket would lead us towards games of New Orleans and Green Bay. I'm taking Green Bay in that one. I think they're fantastic. They might be the best team in the league right now. And I'm taking, since I took Seattle and Tampa, Seattle versus Tampa, this one coming to you from Seattle, I'm going to take the Bucks. I think the upside is still there. So we've got two high upside teams in Baltimore and Tampa Bay, taking on the consistent dominant forces that are Kansas City and Green Bay in our championship games. Who are we picking to come out of championship weekend? We're taking the Chiefs and the Packers. 54 years later, a rematch of Super Bowl I. Well, the first one, obviously, went to the Green Bay Packers. And the Packers, as I just said, might be the best team in the NFL. Their defense was great last year. It's still pretty good. They've got playmakers like Jair Alexander on that squad. Take a look at the offense. Rodgers trying to cement that legacy, not being a one-and-done Super Bowl QB. Trying to cement it, bring it home. Look at the running game with Aaron Jones. Devontae Adams has really escalated into that top tier of receiver. He might be a top five. He's definitely in the conversation for top five wideouts. He might be a top three. Some might have him number one. Take a look at what's happened with Tonyan developing into a legitimate receiving threat at tight end, even though for some reason Evan Ingram's a Pro Bowler over him. And we're taking the Chiefs. We're taking the Chiefs because Patrick Mahomes is unlike, I want to say he's unlike any quarterback I've ever seen, but really, and there's an argument to be made, the quarterback he's most like is the guy he'd be facing in that game. He's got the gunslinger arm. He's got that mobility. He's not fast, but somehow he finds a way to run for it when they need it. Just like Aaron Rodgers. But he's got Tyreek Hill. He's got Travis Kelce. And he's got a D coordinator. And this is, of course you knew this was going to come up if you've been listening for a while. And if you didn't, shame on you. He's got Steve Spagnuolo, who knows how to win games against the Green Bay Packers in huge situations, who knows how to win Super Bowls, who knows how to make adjustments to bring it home. You might say, look, well, San Francisco threw last year. What did Spags do? Well, he got a ring is what he did. And I think the Kansas City Chiefs, I'll hold on to our beginning of the year pick. Beginning of the year, we had the Chiefs winning it. Last year, we had them losing it. This year, give me the Chiefs to win this one in our little Super Bowl bracket. It's worth noting, at the beginning of the playoff Super Bowl bracket, have we ever been right? I don't know. We'll have to check back. Let's take a look at last year. Last year, beginning of the playoffs, we had New Orleans against Kansas City again, just like we had at the beginning of the year. And no, New Orleans did not win, just like their abbreviation. Take a look at the year prior. We had the Saints winning that. Wow, we're big Saints fans on this show, apparently. I didn't even realize. We had the Saints taking on an upstart Charger team on Wild Card Weekend. That didn't happen. The year before, what do we have? Year before, I don't even know if we did it. It appears we did not even the first season. We didn't go through the Super Bowl bracket. That year was weird, though. I think we had the Giants making the playoffs that year. That definitely didn't happen. So, give me the Chiefs to win it over the Packers, Super Bowl Sunday. If that's the case, it'll be a fantastic playoffs. I've set the stage. It's like a WWE video game. I've set the stage for you. It'll be fantastic if it happens. If not, either way, we'll be here. That brings us to the end of our pick'em portion of this week's episode. A little bit of a super-sized, super wild card weekend episode. And we didn't even get into some of the things we were considering discussing, but they'll be here next week. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us all regular season long. Hope you guys enjoyed the regular season. Hope you're ready for a playoff push, which will be unlike any other in the NFL. In history, obviously, with the new playoff teams and six games this weekend. Hope you're excited. I know I am. And I truly appreciate each and every one of you out there that listens each week. If it's your first one, thank you for coming. If it's you've been around for a while, we thank you more than you could ever know. That brings us to the end of episode 97 of Necessary Roughness Podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. Join us again next Saturday. Next Saturday, it's not going to be as many games. We won't be doing as early a matinee. Had to wake up a little early for this one, or record a little early, I should say. Thank you. Forever grateful. As always, I'm your host, Nicholas Denotic, signing off.